funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies program.
When is the last time you came across news online, and what did you do about it? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. As our lives have moved online, the news has followed us there. We find stories when we seek out a journalism website, of course, but they pop up in lots of other places too. Our emails, our Facebook feeds, in links fed to us from texts and in tweets. And that raises an interesting question at this moment when many people worry about the creep of fake news into the public consciousness. How aware are we of where our news comes from, and what kinds of stories are we most likely to talk about and share? As director of journalism research for the Pew Research Center, these are questions Amy Mitchell wanted answers to. You can find a link to her report, How Americans Encounter, Recall, and Act Upon Digital News, at think.kera.org. She joins us this hour from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C. Amy, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
How much news do we get from online media these days?
Well, online is reaching more and more Americans every day as we speak, and is really now a primary way that most Americans are keeping up with what's going on. This is through a combination of social media networks, through email alerts, through going to news websites and apps. But digital is very much pervasive in Americans' lives today.
There was a time, some of us will remember, when news was something that we consumed on schedule, right? We pulled the morning paper off the doorstep, we sat down to watch the evening news. How many times a day do we get news in the second decade of the 21st century?
Well, I mean, it's very much a sort of continuous experience over the course of the day. People dipping in and out, getting continuous updates, whether it's through an alert that pops up on your phone, something somebody tweets out at you, something you see in another one of your networks, or that you're choosing on your metro or train ride in to take 15 minutes and 20 minutes and scroll through your mix of the sources you tend to turn to most. It is a very different kind of experience now, as you said, than what we had a decade ago, let alone, you know, longer ago. And it's not just that it happens over the course of the day. It's also both mixed in with a lot of other kinds of activities. So you may be paying a bill online and you get an alert, and then the next, you know, 30 seconds later, you're reading a news story. So it's very much mixed in with other kinds of activities. It tends to be more social because so much is now coming through social media as well, and is often piecemeal. So people get snippets of news, of a news story, and then they learn more about it later. And that can be a challenge both for news organizations and also for the public to be sure that they're, you know, really up to speed with what's happening and what the latest set of facts are around a current event.
One thing that's really amazing is we now get nearly as much news from social media as from visits to news organizations' websites and apps.
Well, what we found was this was a pretty unique way of studying digital news habits. And we had a group of U.S. adults, so 18 and over, and we kept in touch with them over the course of a week and pinged them, for lack of a better word, twice a day, asking them about news they may or may not have gotten online in the last 2 hours. And people then, you know, answered sort of a short set of questions. And, you know, what we found when we asked about the pathway that they used to get to that news, was it through social media? Was it by going directly to a news website? Was it from something a friend or family member emailed you? That far and away, the two of the five that we asked about that were most common were news organizations' websites, people going there directly, or referrals through social media. And in both cases, a little more than a third of the time on average, consumers were getting their online news through one of those means.
So you ping them twice a day. I'm curious about the conversations that took place before you decided that this would be your methodology. There are probably lots of ways to do this. How did you decide that multiple daily contacts was the best way to get good, accurate information?
Well, you know, we study consumers' news habits in a lot of different ways. And so this is just one of our, you know, more recent methods and more recent studies. But the reason we did it, and it followed on a sort of a more traditional online survey where we asked people a lot about their attitudes about news, their trust, their sense of accuracy, in addition to their news habits. But what this allowed us to do was to get a more accurate sense in terms of what people are remembering about things like follow-up actions, about the pathway, about how they landed on that news, about the source, whether they can actually remember the source of that news article. So it was able to give us a deeper and a more fuller picture of some of those important questions that are harder to get at in other ways.
And a little more than half the time, people remember what organization produced the story. Is that right?
That's right. So that is when they followed a link. So if they clicked on a link, and this is one of the questions that has been, you know, circulating around for the last several years, is how much do people remember links they follow? We're clicking on links, you know, a lot over the course of the day. Do people recognize that brand, that outlet, if it's coming through something that's a two-step process? And we found that about half the times, 56% on average, when people clicked on a link, they were able to write in a name of that news source.
And people might be sitting here thinking, well, why does that matter to anybody other than, you know, companies that are trying to sell ads? But I guess in this current era, it's an indication of whether people are aware of whether the news came from a source they trust or some other place that may or may not be devoted to journalistic accuracy.
Well, that's right. I mean, one of the questions that people have been spending a lot of time talking about is, you know, is this issue of misinformation on the web or a different sense of facts or reality? There are a lot of different ways people are talking about this. And one of the questions that's behind that is, how do people make sense and parse through all the different news content that they come across on the web? And awareness of the source is one of those ways.
I don't think you asked about this in this particular study, but maybe you have a sense of it. How often people share news information without having actually clicked through to the story itself?
That is not something that we have real specific, you know, data on. You'd need to know for sure if they were clicking on it and, you know, be able to verify that. There are people that suggest in their own kind of work that there are a lot of times that people will pass it on before they've actually clicked on it or, you know, fully read whatever it is that they're sharing. We do find that when we ask about sort of the different kinds of follow-up actions that, you know, that somebody may take, that sharing things is common, and it's most common when the news was coming through social media to begin with. So people are more likely to reshare it, for example, on social media, if that's how they got to that news in the first place.
What kinds of stories are we most likely to pass on?
Well, it's interesting. So we asked about, you know, the different pathways. We also asked about, you know, the topics of news and, you know, from business news to sports news and political news. And, you know, we found that this was a very high political time period. It was during sort of the height of the primaries. So, you know, politics was very common in terms of the news that people were getting. But what we found was that stories that had to do with business news and finance versus community and health news had a lot of different habits tied to them. And people were more likely to take a kind of follow-up action with community news and with health news, less likely to do so when it came to business and finance or sports news. But it was also true that people were more likely to seek out business and finance news by going directly to a news website. Well, community news, people tended to kind of happen upon in social media. So a real different dynamic that's at play there.
When you say community news, are you talking about local stories?
Yeah, generally. Mm-hmm. Stories that had to do with your own community.
And I wonder what accounts for those stories getting the most traction. Is it the sense maybe that this stuff directly affects me and my friends and neighbors, whereas things that are happening elsewhere might not?
you know, there could be a combination. And again, by traction, you know, what we're talking about is acting upon in some way and sharing in some way. And whether it is because there are people that I know that may directly relate to this, you know, piece of news that I just learned about, or that it also happened to be something that was more likely to be found in social media and therefore shared in social media, whereas going directly to a news website, the kinds of follow-up actions that people tended to take there for those kinds of stories in general were more private. It was searching for more information. It was saving something for later, as opposed to, you know, doing something outward like posting on social media. However, I will make the large point that above and beyond across all pathways and all topics, the action that is far and away the most common to take is offline and is talking with somebody, either in person or on the phone, about that particular news story.
So in other words, just, you know, walking down the hall and saying, can you believe what happened, you know, with so-and-so?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And in some earlier research we did, we found that, you know, even young people who are much more likely to be online and doing the bulk of their news consumption online, they were still more likely to talk about something offline with somebody than they were to do any one of these other kinds of actions.
Is that a hopeful sign that people are still having real-life conversations?
Well, certainly that, you know, that having some kind of follow-up, having some sort of thought process and conversation with fellow Americans, with others, you know, that are around you about what's going on, you know, sort of speaks to some of what's at the core of how our democracy functions in terms of being able to have discussion. One of the other questions that we've explored and that has been on people's minds is, to what degree are those discussions with people that already agree with us, that think like we do? What we found in some of our other research is that people who are the most ideologically oriented on one side of the spectrum or the other, so they have sort of the most consistent ideological beliefs on one side of the aisle or the other, they're more likely to have those kind of discussions with people that think like they do, that share their political views, than those who are less ideologically inclined to begin with.
Do those of us who are more in the middle, somehow less ideologically inclined, do we trust the people who are far in one direction or another? Do we assume that they know more about this stuff than we do?
Well, it's interesting. So another thing we asked about was, are you a listener or a leader when you have these kinds of conversations? So many of the folks that are in the middle are they're following news less closely. They're following political and government news less closely. So they're sort of less passionate about it in general. And then they say that they tend to more be those that are listeners in these conversations than leaders of these conversations. So it doesn't speak exactly to trust, but it certainly is sort of about what do you see your role as in these kind of discussions.
Ironically, when we get news directly from a news organization, we are less likely to take action afterwards, talk about it, share it, look for more.
Yeah, it's and as I was saying earlier, I mean, what's more likely in those kinds of experiences where you're going directly to the website is that it is, if you do take an action, it tends to be more private. It tends to be a personal experience, such as searching for more information or saving something, you know, to read for later, as opposed to the outward. And again, we don't have, you know, we can't answer every other kind of question that may be behind this, but if you think about it, somebody is taking the time, they're going directly to a website. It's sort of more of a personal experience to begin with. Mm-hmm. Just like if you're opening your daily newspaper, turning on your network television news show, and it's sort of kept in the confines of that experience.
Amy Mitchell is my guest. She's director of journalism research for the Pew Research Center. Her report is How Americans Encounter, Recall, and Act Upon Digital News. You can find a link to it at think.kera.org. To ask a question or talk about how you use digital news, call 1-800-933-5372.
Bye. funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening master's program for working professionals. You can apply now for the summer of 2017. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Amy Mitchell, who is Director of Journalism Research for the Pew Research Center. You can find a link to her most recent report, How Americans Encounter, Recall, and Act Upon Digital News, at think.kera.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can email think@kera.org or call 1-800-933-5372. Amy, we are less likely to remember the source of a story if it came to us through social media. Is that because we sort of trust our friends as sources and don't pay as much attention?
Well, it could be. I mean, it was a real striking finding. You know, even though people were able to write the name in about half the time, 56% of the time, it was much more likely that they could recall the source if they had gone directly to a news website or gotten a link, you know, if they had gotten that link either from on the website or through an email, text, or alert from a news organization. So there's already some kind of, you know, brand awareness in that initial connection. So it is certainly reinforcing. And that is something that does not nearly carry over as much once we enter that social realm.
I was surprised to read that fully 10% of people told you the source of the news they encountered in any given two-hour period was Facebook. Facebook does not produce news content.
That's right. You know, and we asked specifically if you could name the source of the link, if you could name the specific news outlet. And we did have 10% the name Facebook. And that put it, you know, below CNN, which was named by 14%. Fox News was up there at 12%, and then, you know, Facebook at 10%. So it's definitely high up there. And, you know, that's another whole area of question to explore, is to what degree people do see social media sites or search engines as, you know, quote unquote, sources of their news.
Yeah, this gave me a lot to think about, because to the extent that Facebook is a brand people use and trust, maybe their trust extends to whatever links they find there, even if they didn't originate with Facebook.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we did some other research that asked a lot about trust. And one of the things we found is, you know, trust overall, when you ask about the news media in general, it's not high. It's, you know, about 20% that say they put a lot of trust in their national news media or in their local news media. But we also tried to put that in context a little bit. And what we found was that was somewhat higher than the level of trust that people showed for news that came to them from their friends and family. And it was far higher than people's sense of trust in social media in general. That was much, much lower. And so that doesn't mean people aren't going to read it. It doesn't mean that in the end people won't, you know, come to believe something that they see there. But there is certainly some awareness or sense of difference in the content that flows through the social realm as compared with even coming to you directly from a friend or family member, or, you know, straight from a news organization.
Facebook has experimented with marking fake news that pops up on its site, or at least stories that have been disputed by a significant number of people. Are those kinds of efforts useful in building the trust that people have of social media?
Well, you know, they certainly could be. And, you know, that's not an evaluation I can really provide. These are new. Facebook's not alone in doing this. Google has taken steps to work to do that as well, to, you know, in the way their algorithm presents news stories in the order. There are a lot of different efforts. There are efforts over in Europe to be doing some of these same types of things. So there's certainly an effort on the part of technology companies to figure out what role they should be playing here, what role they can play here. And one of the challenges with what's happening is that there are all these different levels of what one might call fake news. It's really hard to even define. Is it news that's completely made up? How is that different than misinformation? News that might be grounded in some factual event that occurred, but then the take on that, or the, you know, the spin, for lack of a better word, or for different things that are attached to that isn't accurate. How do those kinds of news stories get put into different buckets, and how can any company or organization really, you know, be able to successfully parse through, evaluate, and figure out what to show people and what not to show people?
All right, I want to go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also find us on Twitter at KERAThink. David in Dallas is calling. Hi, David.
Hi, Chris. Really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a question for the guests you have, and I was curious if there has been any discovered correlation between age and how quick people on the social media are how quick they pull the trigger on the share button without really seeing if the news that they are sharing comes from a trusted or vetted source. And the reason I ask that question is because in my personal experience on Facebook, I've noticed a significant number of older friends that I have on Facebook just use Facebook for commenting politically and sharing these sometimes outrageous news stories.
Before we get your answer, David, forgive me, what is your definition of your older friends, like older over 40, over 50?
I would say over 50.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for your call. What do you know about that, Amy?
Well, it's interesting because what we found in some of our research in general, and I don't have data that speaks exactly to the question you're asking about, you know, a greater propensity to sort of share without judging, I guess, is kind of what you were asking. But we did find when we ask people about sharing or reposting news stories in social media that young people, and this was, you know, your 18 to 29 year olds, as well as your 30 to 49 year olds, were no more likely to be active in that way as then were your 50 to 64 year olds. So they weren't a whole lot more active either in sharing, reposting, or commenting on news and social media. They are more likely to be getting their news and social media to begin with, but the level of activity in general was not significantly higher according to our data.
Of course, social media technology makes it much easier to take the action of sharing something or of looking up more information. But is there any reason to believe that the likelihood of having a discussion about a particular news story is greater with digital news than it is with news that we get from radio or television or that we get from reading a hard copy of something?
You know, this is an area that other researchers too are spending a fair amount of time sort of thinking about, and it's beyond just the experience of news. It's, you know, are we more social or less social due to the digital age, right? Or do we talk with people more? Do we have communities offline, or are communities online as social as our ones offline were? I don't think there's really a definitive answer to that. I think, you know, one of the things that seems to be mixed in that bucket of conversation to a greater degree today, though, is even if there are conversations, who are they with? How much are we talking about? Are we talking about differences of views? Are we sharing perspectives and learning from what others may believe if it's different from our own? I think there's a lot of momentum around trying to sort of parse through that and get a better understanding of that.
I don't know if you're aware of research on how people define having a conversation on social media about a story as opposed to having an argument, if people think of those as the same thing or functionally different.
Well, we do know that people, you know, they do get offended by things that people post online. And, you know, we've also asked about defriending somebody because you disagreed with something that they said politically or with, you know, one of their political views online. And it was sort of interesting. In some earlier research, we found that, you know, again, talking about that ideological consistency grouping, that those that are on the ends were more likely to have sort of self-reinforcing networks. More on the conservative side than the liberal side, but those on the liberal were more likely to actually block somebody eventually because they disagreed with their political views than those on the right.
What's been interesting to me is that since I've been on social media, I know the politics of a lot more of my casual friends, certainly, than I would have in the past. I know, you know, how somebody votes, even if our kids played soccer together 8 years ago. I might not have asked any questions about that, but because I follow them on Facebook, I have a sense of that.
Yeah, and that's something there's been a lot of follow-up conversation about, too, following the election, is as people, you know, began sharing their views in what was a very, very closely followed election when it came to the news, even in the primary season. And back in January of 2016, we had, you know, 9 in 10 adults that had gotten news about the election in the past week. And that was almost basically that high among your 18 to 29-year-olds as well. So people were really, you know, tuned in to this election in a way that hasn't, you know, always been the case. And political views being shared, and in some cases, people offended, realizing that they were offending other people by putting things out. So definitely a different dynamic that's at play.
Help me understand this. To me, it seems, for the most part, pretty easy to tell if news or information is coming from a decent news site, you know, a site that practices journalistic ethics. Are a lot of people simply lumping every bit of media into the same category, or are people in fact approaching this information with a little more nuance?
Well, you know, I think there are a number of different things that are at play. And, you know, one is the degree to which people are, you know, taking the time to actually stop, look, digest, where is this coming from? What is this source? If I haven't heard of it, am I going to click and try to learn more about that source? You know, that all is taking time as people are, you know, parsing through and wanting to get back and see what else is in their social networks. But the other thing that's happening is sometimes it's really hard to figure out. There are outlets, and this is some of what was, you know, pervasive up around this election. There are outlets, commercial-oriented outlets, that are taking URLs similar to legitimate news organizations like ABC. And creating a URL that looks very similar to that so that somebody could very easily be, you know, led to think that this was coming, in fact, from ABC News or another one of these types of, you know, very well-known national news brands, when in fact it's a completely commercial separate entity that is just there to give you something very, very startling or, you know, something that's going to drive you to click that they can then make advertising money off of.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Director of Journalism Research for the Pew Research Center, Amy Mitchell. Her report is How Americans Encounter, Recall, and Act Upon Digital News. You can find a link to the whole report at think.kera.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can find us on Twitter at KERAThink. Amy, were there side conversations generated with any of the people that you surveyed about concerns that they don't know what they can trust and they're worried about evaluating the news that finds its way into their feeds?
Well, you know, again, I mean, the lower level of trust that shows up for social media in general is certainly one that suggests that people are aware that there is, you know, something different about news that's going to come through. That's going to come through this sort of space. We also asked about, you know, getting news and coming across news that is either completely made up or, you know, is not entirely accurate. And, you know, there we found that about 2/3, or about 64%, say that completely made up news causes a great deal of confusion about basic facts. And some of our earlier research, we had 8 in 10 that say Americans not only disagree over plans and policies, but they can't even agree on the basic facts. And that was asked, you know, prior to this, you know, election. So there is a lot of sense about the confusion that can come about from what's being shared and not being entirely sure of what's true and not true. We had about 1/4 of Americans say that they've shared fake news, whether knowingly or not, that they've shared news with others that was completely made up. And 1/3 that say they often come across made-up political news online. So definitely a sense that there is a lot circulating in our digital spheres that that we're not sure about, and that we need to be able to parse through to make sense of. And the question that comes out of that is, one, are people interested in taking the time to do that? Two, if they are they equipped to do so? Do they know the kinds of things to look for? Do they know the kinds of questions to ask?
That's astonishing to me that one-third of people surveyed said they had shared fake news by mistake or intentionally. That's a huge number.
Well, and that was a quarter. That one was 23% that had shared. Yeah. And so something that gets passed along. Whether there's, you know, a line that goes with that that says, you know, this is the most outlandish thing I've ever seen, or whether it's, sent as something that somebody may think is actually factual. Nonetheless, it is causing it to, you know, touch further people, get to further inboxes or into other feeds.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Scott calling from Irving. Hi, Scott.
Hey. Yeah, my question is, I've been spending time reading the news online on my computer or on my phone, and then what I really like to do is go to the library and read it in print. So my question for the guest is there a difference between what we read in print and what we read on the Internet? Because I notice I go to the library and read the front headlines of the newspaper, and it's not even on the Internet. So what will be your comments about that?
In general, if you were going to the same outlet to their print, you know, your print newspaper version, and then you were going to your newspaper website, you are likely going to see some different content, largely in two different ways. The first being that what's on the web tends to be more up to date. They're updating it throughout the day, really continuously, with either updates to stories that were already published in that morning's paper, or updates to stories that were on the web earlier, or new events that occurred in general throughout the course of the day. They are also have way more content on the web. There's just a lot more that somebody can fit into their website than they can fit onto their page. And so the front page of a paper, what you're going to see there is often somewhere on the front of the website at that point in time. So sort of that morning, you know, when that paper would go to bed, which is the sort of the term of art they'd use, many of those stories are likely to also be on the sort of homepage of the website. But that homepage on the website is going to shift around a lot as they update those stories.
Amy Mitchell is with us. She's director of journalism research for Pew. Her report, How Americans Encounter, Recall, and Act Upon Digital News, is available online. We've put a link to it at think.kera.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, where students can customize their degree, like Diane Jay, internationally published creative writer. More at smu.edu/DLS.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Amy Mitchell, Director of Journalism Research at the Pew Research Center. You can read her report, How Americans Encounter, Recall, and Act Upon Digital News Online. We've put a link up at think.kera.org. And you can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372. Amy, I want you to understand that I ask this with great respect for the work you do and the work Pew does in general. Why ask these questions? What's the purpose of knowing what Americans do after we see a source of digital news?
Well, you know, certainly it influences people's sense of what's happening in society. It influences, you know, the news, the events of the day, the issues that are being talked about are going to influence how people vote, which of their state legislators they choose to vote for, what they choose to support at the national level. It's how they become educated about the workings of our country and of our interactions with the world and what's happening beyond one's own borders. So there is so much that has changed. If we just think about the last decade in the way that people are getting informed, in the different kinds of content that is available to people, which is much, much more expansive today than it was earlier, but also has a lot of these different new kinds of elements attached to it in terms of connecting with other people, in terms of the role that individuals themselves play in what other people eventually learn about. So our own role of sharing news, of passing it along, of filling somebody's network, our friend's network, with different kinds of content, we play a role in how others are informed, just as news organizations do. And so there's a lot that's still changing, and there's a lot to understand and learn in this new digital realm that we're all still, you know, really trying to get our heads around. And we talk a lot about social and digital in general, but certainly mobile is an area that is also, you know, just had tremendous influence on how we go about our day and how we keep up with what's happening.
All right, let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. Lewis is calling from Mansfield. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So the question that I have really centers around this, and sorry, I am going to pull over here as I ask this question because I want to be a safe driver.
I'm all about safety. You pull over.
Okay. So I know somebody who got so inspired by the or inspired to have a voice grassroots, kind of along the lines of the marches and things like that that are in opposition to the current White House and things. But this guy, actually a really good friend of mine, set up a website based on its real news, real quotes, you know, lots of references to stories in the AP, CNN, things like that. But it is new media. It's a new website. It is also ad-based in terms of revenue, because, you know, if the time you invest, I mean, you've got to have some way to support the site and support yourself. But so it's real news. It's new. But what would be recommended to do to differentiate such a site from fake news sites?
That's an interesting question, Amy. Like, what are the lessons here for news organizations, whether well-established or brand new?
Yeah, it's a terrific question. And certainly, whatever form of transparency one can take is you know, really a way to help consumers figure out who you are and what's behind your news. So having your about section be very, very clear, be very easy to find, you know, with a very clear sort of header and link on that homepage, to have it perhaps linked to within each news story itself, so that you can, you know, somebody can sort of parse through and make sense of it. To have a mission statement that says who this is, who funds it, where the money comes from, you know, what the orientation is and the purpose behind it. All of that then allows a consumer to, you know, be able to judge and assess that information, that news content, for him or herself. But the easier that is to find, the more helpful it can be for the consumer.
We have an email from Mark in Dallas who wants to know, in this era of hostility toward many media organizations, are sites like Snopes and others that are trying to establish validity of stories more important these days?
Well, certainly the public feels that, you know, a major role of the news media in general is to, you know, look into the facts, is sort of that fact-checking, and to look into the accuracy of news, and to draw attention to content that is not accurate, or statements that a political leader may say that are inaccurate. So to emphasize those so that people understand the inaccuracy of it. So that is a role that Americans view as important and critical. And there are more news organizations too that have, you know, certainly during the election, were leaning heavily on that fact-checking role, and using other kinds of organizations that do fact-checking on a regular basis to help them out.
All right, back to the phones at 1-800-933-5372. Susan is calling from Dallas. Hey, Susan.
Hey, how are you? Yeah, I just had a question. In her research, has she, or was it broken down in any way in their questioning to party affiliation at all? I know I'd spent time with my dad over the summer when my mom was ill, and he had tuned in to a particular station a lot. And when I would call him out on certain things, he wouldn't want to hear it at all.
So certainly in terms of, I mean, we've done a lot that looks at party ID and you know, ideology. And, if we look at sort of trust, if we look at specific sources, we found that for election news in particular, Trump supporters and Clinton supporters tend to be going to very different places, with Trump supporters much more, you know, pretty heavily oriented around Fox News. We had about, 40% overall of Trump voters that named Fox News as their main source for election news in the 2016 campaign. No one singular kind of outlet among Clinton voters, but certainly a different mix, you know, which includes MSNBC and local TV and CNN and NPR. So definitely turning to different outlets and a different sense of trust, with Republicans in general tend to be less trusting of the news media overall than do Democrats. And when we asked about a mix of 30-some different, very specific national news outlets, the ones that are trusted by one side of that aisle in the continuum tend in many cases to be the ones that are distrusted by that other side. So there's a real sense of divide, not only in where people are going, but in what they trust and distrust.
Any sense of whether Americans see something like a presidential tweet as equivalent to news reported by journalists?
Well, we certainly find out that, you know, about a third of Americans were getting news directly from one of the two campaigns, election news directly from one of the two campaigns during this election cycle. So it doesn't, you know, these don't tend to be primary news sources, but they do tend to be in the mix of how people are being informed and what they're learning about. And, you know, certainly a tweet can carry news in that.
All right, back to 1-800-933-5372. Joe is on the line now in Fort Worth. Hi, Joe.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go right ahead.
The question I have is that, you know, I probably get 90% of my news online. I read as much as I can online, and I try to visit, obviously, reputable sources like New York Times, LA Times. But I also try to get an international perspective by looking at places like J-Post and Der Spiegel. Is there a site that, or some way that we can track how accurate the information that's put out by those sources?
What I would say is probably, I mean, there are certain outlets that may, certain organizations that may, you know, look into some of that fact checking. But what's really the best thing for any consumer to do for any kind of outlet is to have more than one place they're going and to learn about a particular news story. So if you see something, you know, to check a couple other places, and are the same people, are multiple people reporting out that same thing? And if you find that there's just one site that seems to have this, it's probably not going to be a scoop for very long, if indeed it's true, you know, with the way that things travel in the web. So, verifying by looking at multiple different places that is one way of trying to assure yourself that what you're learning is indeed accurate and reliable.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Amy Mitchell, who is Director of Journalism Research for the Pew Research Center. We're talking about her new report, How Americans Encounter, Recall, and Act Upon Digital News. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Amy, have you observed news organizations adjusting their business and marketing models to accommodate the way people find them now? They can't assume necessarily that people will go to their homepage and go through the news in the way that the journalistic organization has curated it.
Oh, absolutely, yes. You know, vast differences in the way that content is presented, the way stories are shared, just the presence of many news organizations in social media, even in, you know, places like Snapchat and Instagram. They're certainly looking for new ways to connect and, you know, very aware of the patterns and how much happens that's not necessarily a direct connection between them and a consumer, but trying to find more of those direct connections where possible. One of the things that we've seen in social media is that most of these social media networks did not have news as a part of how they began. News was not a part of how Facebook was created, or Twitter, or Instagram, or Snapchat. And over time, news has become, in many cases, a pretty significant part of those experiences, because it's what people do over the course of the day. And, you know, oftentimes news organizations, you know, they may have been later to the game than they would have liked in terms of getting in there, and financially are still finding it very difficult to be able to exist in this digital realm. It's still very hard for most to find the real financial revenue streams that they need through digital alone. But they're certainly trying to figure out how they can connect with audiences in these new ways.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Bryce is calling from Fort Worth. Hey, Bryce.
Hello. I was wondering if you had any recommendations on how to find good, reputable sources for local news.
Any thoughts on that, Amy?
Well, you know, I mean, we're not in the recommendation business, and I have to say that, you know, that's not a part of what we do, but certainly the same sort of things of trying to look at the sources that are being cited, the mix of content they have in there, being able to verify through multiple sources. You know, certainly local areas can vary quite a bit in the extent, you know, the number of different outlets that are available to people for local news. You know, we did a study that looked at three different cities and, you know, it included Denver that had over 140 different kinds of news outlets that were available to people, and then a place like Macon, Georgia that had far, far fewer. Mm-hmm. You know, you're down in the 20s. And so there's more to parse through in some areas than in others. But, you know, bringing educated questions to bear, talking about what, you know, the content one comes across with others to see if they're learning the same sorts of things. Those are certainly all tools that somebody can use.
People have always cared what was going on in the world, but it does seem we've come to a unique moment in terms of this sense that you have to be keeping up just to have a conversation on the elevator with somebody who steps aboard.
Well, you know, absolutely, and that it's changing all the time. So, you know, how does one really keep up to speed with the latest nuances? And certainly this is something news organizations were feeling several years back, you know, when they were moving from what was a once a day publication or a, you know, three different sort of, you know, television newscasts you did over the course of the day to feeling like there you had to have that absolute up to the minute piece of information to share. And if now consumers are that sort of reaching the consumer level, you know, that's yet another step in how digital is influencing our lives.
Amy Mitchell is Director of Journalism Research for the Pew Research Center. You can read her whole report online. It's called How Americans Encounter, Recall, and Act Upon Digital News. Find a link to it at think.kera.org. Amy, it's been really interesting. Thank you very much for making time for us.
It's been such a pleasure. Take care.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is our technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. And Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle is at KERA Think. Subscribe to our podcast and find out about upcoming shows at think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.